You're listening to Locked On Cavaliers, your daily look at the Cleveland Cavaliers, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Hello and welcome back to the Locked On Cavaliers podcast. I am Chris Manning, your host from ForTheSword.com, SB Nation's Cleveland Cavaliers site, and I'm here on Locked On Cavs, the Cavaliers podcasting number one daily sports podcast network. That is, of course, the Locked On Podcast Network. Joining me today to just do a little Cavs summer check-in. We're about a month away-ish from media day. A lot of the big moves are still done, mostly done with Rodney Hood's money and David Nwaba's money still sort of out there. But joining me to talk about Colin Sexton and a whole bunch of other Cavs things is Eric Jackman, a.k.a. New York Rick. Eric, what's going on?
Hey, Chris. I'm glad to be back and excited for this upcoming Cavs season.
So are you, I've asked this to like a lot of people in my life, but when you found out LeBron though was going to the Lakers, and this will really be one of the few LeBron-y things we're going to talk about directly, but how did you find out LeBron was going? Were you like, I've seen some people flipping their Instagram and just saw the Clutch Sports thing. I happened to be pulling in the driveway coming back from vacation and got the notification on my phone, but how did you find out that LeBron was going to LA? And what was your just initial reaction to that?
All my friends know me as a Cavs fan. So before I saw anything on social media, I got a bunch of texts just saying, well, there it is. So I immediately ran to Twitter and saw the posting of the statement by Clutch Sports. And my initial reaction was just, okay, I was prepared for this time, expecting it. And good for him. I'm happy he's able to get what he wants. Clearly, there was no theatrics to this one, so I think he handled it in the way that he thought was most appropriate, as opposed to the last time, which he took a lot of heat for, no pun intended.
The pun is forever.
Yeah, this one was super low key, and I think it's a sign of him being mature and being at peace with it. So I'm just happy for him, who gave the Cavs a lot of great years.
Yeah, it's, if you look about this in terms of just the optics of it, It's very much a complete opposite of when he left for the Heat. The only time we've seen LeBron talk so far is at his school opening in Akron, and that, you know, he did the Rachel Nichols interview. He didn't say anything, I think, particularly revelatory, but he's been very quiet. He's just been, you know, some Instagram photos and that public appearance, which wasn't basketball related, really. And that's the opposite of Miami, where he obviously made the decision on national television. And then he went and there was the big celebration in Miami where he said, not one, not, you know, not two, not three. It's been very quiet. And I think that has sat well with people that are like, into the team. I also think like that if there had not been a title win, I wonder what this looks like. But I think that title win and just that being so good, and then, like, you know, the little fun stuff of the summer, like getting Channing Frye back, getting Kevin Love to sign a big extension, Colin Sexton being very fun at Summer League, Jetty Osmond being intriguing at Summer League, that doesn't obviously, you know, make it any weirder that LeBron no longer plays for the team again, and there's some failings in that, of course, and some weirdness that will come from not playing for a title next year. I think there'll be some frustration there, but I think there has been other stuff that at least people that are into the Cavs and not just in a LeBron way, at least, I think, can still be interested in. I think that in itself is a very different place, too, from when he left for the Heat way back when.
I've completely moved on. I'm ready for this season. I'm ready for Kevin Love to sign all kinds of extensions in front of all kinds of construction throughout the season.
Hope they got paid, though. That's my thing. I just need Kevin. Like, I want those workers to get paid. They didn't watch, like, a dude. I hope that wasn't like a on their lunch break or something. That's my one thing about that. That was kind of weird. That was like my one thing. I'm like, yeah, I don't know about this. But let's start with Colin Sexton. He I don't know how you felt about him on draft night or what you knew about him. I came in very as just evaluating him and trying to figure out what he brought. I didn't know a ton about him. I think don't watch a ton of college basketball. It's just not, I don't have enough time in my life. But I think Summer League for me was really intriguing because I think there you saw some of the ability he has to switch levels. He has some of the ability to get to the rim. He also just seems to compete. The Young Bull Challenge will be like the clip of Summer League for him. But like that in the context of that clip, he was like gaming up trying to guard Josh Hart, who's like a good NBA player and it is one of the better players that was at Summer League this year. In a close Summer League game, he chases that competitiveness and he goes after it. I think there's some things there you want to see how he irons it out and how he looks in the regular season and everything. But Colin Sexton Summer League, I think was really fun, and he's an interesting type of piece for them to draft. I think as their first young piece post LeBron. Obviously, Kevin Love is the focal point of this team now. It is his franchise. But if you're looking at the young guys, if Sexton's the lead of that pack, he's a really interesting guy to have there. And it's also interesting that he's wearing number two.
Yeah, I, like you, don't follow college basketball. Didn't know a ton about Colin Sexton. My first exposure to Colin Sexton was I have a brother-in-law. My brother-in-law, Ryan, is a Knicks fan. And at number nine, he was saying there's a guy named Colin Sexton that he really wants. I didn't think much of it. Again, I don't follow college basketball in a huge way. Didn't know much about him. But when the Cavs drafted him, I turned to Ryan for a little assistance in evaluating him. What he told me was, he's got heart, he's got tenacity, he fights hard. And then he showed me a clip of him playing what I believe was a 4-on-5 basketball game in college and not giving up, being one of the only players to really not give up. And that told me everything I needed to know. Then, obviously, I started seeing the clips of him talking shit to Penny Hardaway Sr. while his son is on the court. And I instantly fell in love with Colin Sexton. I've always liked the players like that, the ones who, you know, leave it all on the floor, but also let the people know about it with their mouth a little bit. One of my favorite players, and I've talked about this on this pod actually, was Delonte West, and he has that dog in him, and I think Colin Sexton is very much the same way. Then in Summer League, I was just impressed. He made first team. I was impressed with his play. I think his jump shot, obviously, could use a little bit of work, but it didn't look as bad as I think people had described it to me. So I'm pretty excited. I'm all in on Colin Sexton. Young Bull t-shirts and hoodies come into my house immediately. I'm excited for him to kind of lead the franchise. I'm hoping that he gets to see some court time with, you know, behind George Hill, and that he's not buried and just spending this season learning the ropes.
That'll be the real interesting thing here is, does he start from day one? Does he come off the bench and start later down the road? I think that will be one of the defining things of the season is, do they give him the reign to develop on the court, or how slowly do they bring him along? Maybe we'll know that based on preseason and training camp, and Ty really hasn't asked about it. Quick tease of something that's going to be on the pod in maybe a few weeks, and let's say in Cleveland Magazine in a few weeks. Colin, when I got to talk to him, and he doesn't seem to know exactly what the plan for him is yet. If he knows, he's not saying right now. I think that it's still to be worked out, and I think that's sort of fair because Ty probably does have to do some kind of overhauling. They don't really know how Rodney Hood fits in within this yet. I think I really sort of do. It's a selling point for the team that he's this guy who's going to play really hard, and Jetty is sort of in that same cut from that same cloth. I do like that they are getting a guy like that, though, that seems to want to be in the city, that is embracing this, that just seems to be very likable. Like, I don't know if you read the 5-on-5 ESPN did where they quoted some rookies, but he was, to me, one of the more fun people in this. I'm going to pull it up so I can read his exact quote. But they asked him, like, if he bought anything, and he said, quote, "Man, I haven't bought anything. No, I'm cheap. I'm real cheap." Like, there's something about Colin that he's just sort of, like, here to hoop and, like, compete with people. And, like, he's probably very happy that he's making a lot of money and that he's, like, a top 10 pick and all these things. But, like, he just seems like a dude who just wants to compete, play basketball, and just, like, have fun doing it. And that's kind of awesome. And, like, not that Kyrie, like, wasn't likable or anything as a guy, but, like, Colin seems to be the opposite of that in that he's not really aloof and maybe doesn't seem to think the world is flat and, like, isn't, like, built in that way. And there's something, I think, kind of, there's something very endearing about him.
Well, you spoke to him. Did you ask him if he thinks the world is flat?
You know, no. I didn't want to go there. That's like a third interview question. And I need, like, maybe there needs to be, like, a whole thing where, like, I ask him about all the crazy theories cats have. Like, Jordan Clarkson said, like, people used to have pet dinosaurs. Like, maybe I need to, like, bounce all of these off him. But I feel like I need to know him a little bit better first before before I'm like, hey, like, so do you agree with Jordan Clarkson about dinosaurs? I got a third interview kind of thing there.
But suffice it to say, I'm all in on the guy who wants to just play basketball, and the guy who's, you know, going to fight on every single possession. That's my kind of player. I'm ready for the Sexton wagon. I'm ready to, you know, welcome new members. I'm going to be leading the charge. I'll be in the driver's seat. If anybody, you know, wants to hop on, there's plenty of space right now. Get on now before he's, you know, a future MVP.
Future MVP is bold. When you look else at this summer and you look at where he, how he sort of fits into this, would you be okay if, let's say, day one, they say, okay, he is not going to start. He's going to come off the bench and he's going to like back up George Hill because we're going to try to win games. How would that sit with you? Because I think as a team, I sort of get why they might do that. But I am very much on the idea that I think my favorite starting lineup and the one that I think makes sense for them if they're going to try to compete and develop guys involves him starting with George Hill in the same backcourt. And they just deal with being a little bit smaller just because you want him on the court, I think, with Kevin Love and with George Hill as much as possible.
Yeah, I mean, the Kevin Love re-signing makes me think that George Hill gets that spot, that they're trying to compete right now, and that turning the keys over to this, you know, young team is an exactly in the cards at the moment. I think there's a chance that, you know, he's in lineups with Hill and he's in lineups with Hood, you know, assuming Hood comes back. But I don't think he will get the start right away. Would I like to see him start? Yeah, of course, because I want to see the young guys get opportunities and develop right away. But I think there is something to taking a slower approach and learning from the vets. Some guys are ready to come in and contribute right away. Some guys need a little more polish. I think he's one of those guys that could definitely benefit from, learning something from George Hill from the bench. But I wouldn't be upset really either way. I don't think there's a wrong answer there. But if I'm playing NBA 2K and I've got the sticks, I'm putting Colin Sexton in the starting lineup.
Who else is in the starting five with him?
Man, I mean, do you put Clarkson there? Do you put Nwamba?
Jordan Clarkson would be a hard no for me.
That'd be, well, is he any more of a hard no than J.R. Smith?
Oh, I mean, yeah, I would play J.R. over Jordan Clarkson as a starter alongside Colin Sexton 10 out of 10 times.
Yeah, I guess Clarkson's going to definitely try and take the ball out of his hands. I would like to see Nwamba in that spot and just, you know, run the young guys, run the guys who are going to play hard on defense. Not, you know, not that Colin Sexton is some kind of lockdown defender, but he's going to give maximum effort. So maybe that's the backcourt. It's this young, scrappy backcourt that's hounding guys, you know, 94 feet and really trying to turn up the intensity.
I think my five would be, and I've said this before, but I think right now, assuming Hood comes back, I think it would be Sexton, Hill, Jetty, Love, and Nance. I think that would be my five. And I think like you have to see, I think it's very fair to ask JR from day one, like how he feels about that. Cause we already know how he felt about like not starting to accommodate Dwayne Wade. And like, how does he feel when it's a rebuilding situation? And I don't know how you can really manage that or what needs to be communicated there, but that's what I would do. I think in a basketball sense, I think it's sort of the one that intrigues me the most. And it's weird because they don't really have a three. Like, Jetty's probably best served as a two, but like, because they have LeBron and then Jeff Green is the backup and now they're both on different teams. They just don't really have a three anymore.
Can you do that and satisfy ownership though? Cause you've got Tristan Thompson on the bench. You've got Kyle Korver on the bench. You've got J.R. Smith on the bench. You've got Hood theoretically on the bench. That's a lot of money locked up in bench guys.
It's true.
I don't know how well that would play with the owner that's paying their salaries, that these guys are all on the bench. Meanwhile, you have a rookie starting. But it would be fun. It would definitely be fun. And I can't, you know, it's hard for me, as much as I love Tristan Thompson, it's hard for me to justify him getting a starting spot after the year he had last year. The other guys, I mean, I think there's a case for Korver and J.R. Smith are microwave type guys anyway. They're going to come off the bench, but if you're going to pay that Hood contract, I'd probably like to see him in that starting position.
Yeah, Hood's interesting because he would give you some more ball creation. And I think that talking about the money there is fair. I mean, I think if you look at long-term, Sexton and Jetty and Love and Nance are the four guys I would say I'm most sure are in the team's long-term plans, but maybe like year one of that, does you can start other guys. When we look at life without LeBron, we look at life with him not there. Is for me, I'm sort of, as someone covering the team, I am sort of okay. I'm sort of very intrigued by it as a mental thing, because I think that even if he comes back and if they do something, it felt as if they were going to be the same sort of overall overreaching story. Some of the minutiae would obviously be different. The drama year to year is different. And if he had locked up and said, I'm finishing my career here, and then was, you know, the Celtics are coming up, that's a very different East and would be interesting to cover. The spotlight now is certainly lower. But I think there's something really intriguing for me about the Cavs having to actually build something without LeBron. They have not made the playoffs without LeBron in 2 decades. Legitimately 2 decades. That when they got Kyrie and everything last time and were able to get him back, it was a lot of luck. They did a lot of recruiting. They, you know, obviously getting Kyrie was the right pick instead of Derek Williams, but they messed up other picks. They didn't do well in free agency. The Luol Deng trade was a mistake. All these different things. This is their chance to build without LeBron, and I think watching that unfold is going to be really interesting. I have no expectation for it. I think, you know, Kobe Altman, Mike Gansey, Dan Gilbert to some extent, Ty Lue all deserve fresh slates because this is a new challenge for them. And I'm really excited to see how they actually do it, because I don't think anyone can really say with certainty what exactly the Cavs are going to build. We have a general idea of what their hopes are, but I don't think we actually know of how they're going to do it. And that we just, the only way to find out is to go through this season and in the next couple.
Yeah, I love times like this. I missed the Kyrie versus Dion Waiters drama instead of the, you know, how are the Cavs going to fall apart in the playoffs drama. I'm excited about not having LeBron. Now, obviously, that changes the conversation about title contention. But that championship in 2016 made all the difference. And it's once again kind of fun to have a team with a new look where it doesn't all focus about LeBron's day to day. I'm super excited for Sexton. I'm super excited to see, you know, how those veterans on the team either help us back into contention or eventually kind of get shipped out or contracts expire and see what that future holds without LeBron. Yeah, I'm amped. I'm excited. And I think, you know what, I wasn't expecting Kevin Love to come back, but I'm super excited about that too, because people have criminally underrated Kevin Love since LeBron arrived in Cleveland. And I think it's time for him to show that was a mistake and that he really is as good as people remember. There's a lot of talk about how, you know, Kevin Love, when he was the guy, he wasn't getting anything done with the Timberwolves. They never competed. They never went far. I think with this Cavs team, he's got a little bit of a better look. And I'm excited to see that Kevin Love again. I'm hoping that he can return to form there.
Are you expecting him to be Minnesota Kevin Love again? Cause I'm not sure if that's realistic, and that might be a little bit unfair to him, but I think they're certainly going to try it. But are you expecting that with Kevin Love?
Well, not necessarily the exact same numbers, the exact same production, just because I don't think the league plays that way anymore. I don't think they have the guys who stay down low and get 25 and 13 anymore. Or at least Kevin Love is not one of those guys who you'd expect to do that. I think he's extended his game way beyond the 3-point line in ways that at the time teams weren't doing that. He was one of the, you know, early guys doing it, but that wasn't the way the league was going. He was much more down on the block. So I don't think the production and the numbers will be exactly the same, but I think the him being the focal point of an offense is something that can be effective. And I think people have forgotten that. And I think he will thrive in that role, playing, you know, third fiddle when, you know, LeBron and Kyrie were operating. Is something that is tough and something that Chris Bosh, when he was with the Heat and it was Dwayne Wade, didn't get enough credit for. I don't think Kevin Love has gotten enough credit for it, making that work and being successful. But I also think he hasn't gotten enough credit as a basketball player for how hard he really does compete when he's in there. And so, no, I'm not expecting, you know, 25 and 13, but I am expecting him to put up 20 and 10. And I think he'll be a really, really competent piece of the offense and probably an Eastern Conference All-Star.
Who's the second best player on the Cavs next season?
Oh boy. Let's qualify best. Are we thinking who will put up the best numbers? Who will be the most impactful piece. Because I think Sexton, let's say, you know, at a certain point, the Cavs recognize that this is going, you know, downhill and we're likely for the lottery. I think Sexton's going to get the ball and I think he's going to get a lot of burn and probably put up some decent numbers chasing a rookie of the year contention. But I probably think Jetty Osman is going to be the second best overall player for the Cavs. He's been that guy that everybody's been saying, you know, he's got it on both ends. He's a hustler. He's an energy guy. Don't sleep on him. I think this year he's going to get more than enough opportunities to really prove that. I liked what I saw from him in the summer. So I'll go with Jetty.
His potential to play more like he does when he's played with the Turkish national team and like he did playing in the Turkish league to me is one of the more underrated because it's way too early and we haven't really like fully formed opinions of teams yet to some degree. But like if he could like do versions of what he did and we saw flashes of it last year with some of the passes we saw from him, that to me would be a really, really fun thing to see because it would push him. He would make some mistakes, of course, because he's young. Hasn't really played a real NBA season yet because he didn't play much last year. But if they let him do that and they let him just kind of experiment and go for it and just do all of these different things, that to me would be just like a fascinating choice. I do not know what his role will be in that, but if they let him push, they let him create I think the opportunity is there for him to be number two. The opportunity I think there is for Hood to be that, and I think the opportunity there is for Larry Nance to be that. I think the worst case scenario is like if George Hill or Tristan Thompson having a bounce back year settles in at number two, and none of the young guys, including Nance and Hood, really blossom. That to me would be like a bad thing. I think that you want, even if it's in terms of just potential impact or showcasing something for down the road, if it's not one of Sexton, Osman, you could throw Zizic in there, Nance or Hood is one of the guys that isn't like Kevin Love's number two. To me, that would be like the suboptimal situation. But I expect some up and downs with those guys, of course, and maybe Tristan and Hill are more steady. But if they're high, if the other guys can be just pushed a little more than that, to me would be like the best case scenario for the Cavs next year.
Yeah, I'm struggling with Tristan because I really think that a lot of his success was tied to LeBron and being that guy to kind of clean up that mess. I don't know if he's going to reach, you know, what he reached in, you know, 2015, 2016 without LeBron there. I think that's going to be tough for him to replicate. Man, I'm really down on the vets, but I'm hoping that they can prove me wrong. I'm hoping that George Hill and Tristan do have a good year, but you're right. That would really take away from some of the opportunities for the younger guys. But this is the fun. This is the fun we're going to have this season is balancing, which of the younger guys get minutes, which of them don't, which of the vets get minutes, which of the vets go away, which of the vets are traded. Obviously Kyle Korver, somebody's come up in a lot of trade talks. I love the guy. He finally showed up in this playoffs. I was super excited about that. So I'm ready for whatever. That's basically my attitude is like, I'm sitting back and just saying, whatever happens this year, it's going to be fun. I'm excited for the future. I think Colin Sexton was a good pick. I'm excited to see how that plays out. I love Larry Nance Jr. I think he had a tough go last year, but I'm excited to see the potential that everybody in the league saw with him before he arrived on the Cavs and the potential that the Cavs, you know, saw when they traded for him. Zizic seems to be coming on in summer league. I'm hyped. I'm ready.
If you had to pick one, would you pick them finishing in the top in the bottom 10 and keeping their draft pick or making the playoffs? Which one to you would be the scenario that you're more invested in seeing happening, regardless of like what the context of them is, just broadly speaking?
Yeah, the East is super poo-poo, so I'm thinking they're going to make the playoffs. I think they'll get an 8 seed. If they're not an 8 seed, they'll be competing at 9 or 10. But bottom 10, that's rough. I think a lot of projections will have them there. But again, I think I'm higher on Kevin Love than a lot of other people are. And I think he's going to be able to at least carry this team to an 8 seed in the East.
I think if it was the West, I'd be they're dead. But I think it's possible that they do make the playoffs in the East. And so we'll wrap it up on and just one last thing here. Small detail for this Cavs season. Looking at, it could be a role player, it could be some a Ty Lue thing. What is like a small low level Cavs thing that you are very excited to see just how it plays out, because you're just, for whatever reason, you're just intrigued by this particular thing?
I want to see how the organization really feels about Ty Lue, because this season is going to be a lot different without LeBron there, going to bat for Ty Lue and wanting him in that position and, you know, vouching for him, showing respect to him and making it clear that, you know, he's a coach that he would play for. It's going to be super interesting to me to see whether Ty Lue gets that same endorsement from the Cavaliers now, because there's a lot of, you know, there's a lot of talk around the league about him as a coach. I'm going to be interested to see whether he's the coach for the future, or whether this was an operation that was tied directly to LeBron James. I think that's going to be the most interesting. We already talked about, you know, all the younger guys versus the older guys. I have no idea how that's going to play out at the moment. I'm excited about David Nwamba because Bulls fans really, really wanted to keep him and they didn't. So I'm excited about that. But most intriguing for me, that's not an on the court, does this guy get minutes or not get minutes? It's going to be Ty Lue and whether he's the coach for the future or what's happening there.
The Ty Lue one is a good one. For me, I'm going to get a little weird with it. I think it's Billy Preston and what they do with the two-way contract situation. I think you could really argue last year that you could look at what they had in John Holland and what they had in Lennon Perantes. John Holland is still with the franchise, for now at least. They did not get guys that I thought had a ton of upside. Holland is an older guy. He's a plug-and-play guy if he really needed that. I think that's what he was there for. Perantes was a four-year college player. I mean, had some potential, but was not someone I think you really looked as a future rotation piece. Just kind of a limited, decent G League guy, maybe third point guard on a team. I think you look at Billy Preston, he's this two-way, he's their new two-way guy, he's this former highly thought of recruit, he's very athletic, he's very raw. His summer league was a bit up and down, but he had some really positive moments. I do not exactly know what their plan for him is just yet. I don't think, you know, he knows exactly yet. I wonder how much the Cavs are going to change, just where, like, maybe they run more of the same sets they run in Cleveland and Canton this year to give him that experience. But how they decide to bring that guy along and invest in this really raw guy to maybe make him into a rotation piece down the line, to me, I want to see how they handle that, because my belief with two-way contracts is it's a way to roll the dice, and if you're the Cavs, you should do this and try to get young talent that you couldn't draft. And if you, maybe Billy Preston doesn't work out, but it's a low cost, pretty high reward thing if he could work out, and it will, and how they focus on that and bring him along and how much time they invest in that, to me, will be really interesting. And I also just want to see, for me, Larry Nance is the other guy that I want to see what kind of leap he can take. If he can, and, you know, he claims he can shoot, you know, he says he wants to expand his game a little bit and maybe dribble the ball more and all these things. If he could do that kind of stuff and take that kind of leap and expand beyond what he is now, he becomes really, really valuable moving forward. And I think he's going to be around for a while, but he becomes a very, very interesting piece if he can expand his game in a way that makes him more dynamic.
I changed my answer. My real answer is Richard Jefferson going to stop flirting with the Cavs and just sign with them already? Let's get RJ back. RJ, yeah. And Channing need to be back together.
Yeah, if Channing is back and we need road tripping back, I think we need Richard back. And he said he wants to play one more year. And look, he gave a quote to ESPN like a month ago. That, to paraphrase it, said, I want to be in a situation where I can help guys, like, so when I look back at this in 5 years, I know I impacted their career. This is the kind of the perfect environment to do it.
RJ and Channing need to be reunited. Let's make it happen. Let's start the campaign. Road tripping forever. Shout out to Ali as well. And that's what I want to see. I want to see that.
Yeah, he doesn't need to play that much. He needs to just hang out, be a mentor for Jetty and Nwaba and Rodney Hood and do the podcast. And I am all for it. I mean, why not? There's not really a downside to it. There's not. There's literally, I think, no downside into having Richard Jefferson. And maybe, you know, maybe they have reasons. Maybe, you know, maybe there's something there that to me, it would make sense. If he wants it, it would make a lot of sense.
Do it.
Eric, just give everyone a plug. Thank you for coming on. Give everyone a plug of where they can find you out in the world.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at New York Rick. That's New York spelled out and then R-I-C. And you can watch a great show about mixed martial arts called Ariel Helwani's MMA Show live on Twitter, on ESPN's Twitter account, every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern. The best and brightest in the world of MMA can be found there.
You should do it. There's always one interview that I'm just like honestly blown away by listening to that show. The Demetrius Johnson one this week was, I thought, particularly good because he has a very good rapport with DJ. But everyone on that show usually comes and says something very, very interesting because Ariel is just very good at getting people to talk, and he's someone you should study if you want to interview people. But you can find Locked On Cavaliers on iTunes, Stitcher, Megaphone, wherever you listen to podcasts. Find it, rate it, leave a 5-star rating and review. You can find me on Twitter and Facebook at CWM Writes. We'll be back on Sunday with that long-awaited mailbag show. No longer sick, feeling good, so we'll have that for you Sunday morning for your weekend. But I'm Chris Manning for myself and Eric Jackman, aka New York Rick. This has been Locked On Cavaliers. Thanks for listening.